Proverbs, and we're going to be bouncing all over the place. There's a lot of Proverbs on our subject this morning. Now, I don't know who figured this out, but according to statisticians, on an average day, a person will speak between 18,000 and 30,000 words. Almost needless to say, women average more than men. I actually read where one man said, you know what, I used up my allotment of 20,000 words while I was at work. I get home and my wife hasn't used any of her 30,000. It's coming, that's right. Proverbs 10:19 states, when there are many words, transgression is unavoidable, but he who restrains his lips is wise. No wonder our mouths get us in trouble. And every culture recognizes this truth as expressed in this very interesting poem. The boneless tongue, so small and weak, can crush and kill, declares the Greek. The tongue destroys a greater hoard, the Turk asserts, than does the sword. The Persian proverb wisely saith, a lengthy tongue and early death. Or sometimes takes the form instead, don't let your tongue cut off your head. The Arab sage has said in part, the tongue's great storehouse is the heart. From Hebrew was the maxim sprung, thy feet should slip, ne'er let the tongue. The sacred writer crowns the whole, who keeps his tongue doth keep his soul. Universally recognized. James chapter 3, verses 1 through 12, and you might want to flip there because I'm going to read the whole passage. Very succinctly, in just 12 verses, describes the power and the contrasting uses of our tongue. James chapter 3. The apostle said, let not many of you become teachers, my brethren, knowing that as such we will incur a stricter judgment. For we all stumble in many ways. If anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to bridle the whole body as well. Now, if we put the bits into the horse's mouth so that they will obey us, we direct the entire body as well. Look at the ships also. Though they are so great and are driven by strong winds, yet they are still directed by a very small rudder wherever the inclination of the pilot desires. So also the tongue is a small part of the body, and yet it boasts of great things. See how great a forest is set aflame by such a small fire? And the tongue is a fire, the very world of iniquity. The tongue is set among our members as that which defiles the entire body and sets on fire the course of our life and is set on fire by hell. For every species of beasts and birds, of reptiles and creatures of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by the human race. But no one can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil and full of deadly poison. With it we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come both blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be this way. Does a fountain send out from the same opening both fresh and bitter water? Can a fig tree, my brethren, produce olives, or a vine produce figs? Nor can salt water produce fresh. Now, while the tongue is the specific object that James is talking about here, it's easy to see that his reference is really to what the tongue does, not the object itself. The bit controls the horse, the rudder steers the ship, a small ember starts a forest fire. What the tongue does is it communicates. It communicates ideas, thoughts, emotions through speech. And as we examine this topic this morning, we're going to be looking through Proverbs. It's going to talk about the tongue, it's going to talk about the mouth, it's talking about speech. But even there, it's talking really about something that's broader, communication of every type. Not just one form as in verbal communication, but every single form that's around. Written communication, signs, even body language, all of it. How are you communicating is really what we want to look at this morning. Now, Paul makes a very relevant comment about communication in 1 Corinthians chapter 14, verses 7 through 11. 1 Corinthians 14, 7 through 11. Now, in this passage, he's discussing the necessity of clear speech in communication, being clear in the language you're using. And here's what he says, starting in verse 7. Yet even lifeless things, either flute or harp, in producing a sound, If they do not produce a distinction in the tones, how will it be known what is played on the flute or on the harp? For if the bugle produces an indistinct sound, who will prepare himself for battle? So also you, unless you utter by this tongue speech that is clear, how will it be known what is spoken? For you will be speaking to the air. There are perhaps a great many kinds of languages in the world, and no kind is without meaning. If then I do not know the meaning of the language, I will be to the one who speaks a barbarian, and the one who speaks to me a barbarian to me. No communication goes on. There's nothing successful if it's not clear. And that's really a basic explanation of communication theory. If your message is not clearly communicated and understood by the recipient, there is miscommunication and misunderstanding. Every single person here has suffered the consequences of when that happens. In order for me to share an idea, I need to encode the message that's in my mind into some sort of language. I then need to transmit that message to you by some means. And then you must receive the transmission of that message and then decode whatever it was I was trying to communicate. And every step of the way, there is opportunity for miscommunication. Now, maybe I can't clearly formulate the thoughts that are in my mind. I can't figure out exactly how to put it into words and then to communicate it. I could be unclear or confusing in the message, whether it's written, verbal, or even visual. My tone of voice, my body language may not match the words that I'm actually saying. Or maybe I'm using one of these electronic means of communication that keeps cutting in and out. Anybody have that problem with a cell phone? Not knowing exactly what was said? As I am transmitting the message, there's all sorts of opportunity for noise. There's opportunities for interference. My handwriting could be illegible. You can't figure out what my chicken scratchings are. Maybe I'm using cryptic phrases that instead of full sentences, and I'm not sure what that means. That has become a large problem with texting and instant messaging. We try to shorten everything so we're not hitting so many buttons, and we end up, I have no clue what that means. It's code words, and I don't know the code. There can be noise and interference in the transmission. Background noise can make it hard to hear. In a series of written notes, one of them can get lost, or part of it can get lost, or it gets misdirected. The person receiving the message may not decode the message properly for a lot of reasons. Maybe they're hard of hearing. Anybody have a relative that you have to work extra hard because they can't hear you? Maybe they have poor eyesight. Or maybe they're just not really paying attention to what you're saying and you thought they got it. They even said, "Yes, dear." But you know for a fact they didn't get it. Have that happen with your husband's ladies? Yes, dear. Yes, dear. If you've asked them, they might repeat it, but they didn't pay any attention. Okay, did they decode it? Then you also have the final problem is they get the message, they receive the message, they actually understood the words that you were saying, but they misunderstand it completely because what they believe those words mean is something completely opposite what you intended in using those words. Communication. It's hard work, but it's well worth the effort to overcome all these things to get it correct, because the consequences can be pretty hard when it's misunderstood, and we've all experienced that. Now, Proverbs does not address the problems related to communication theory. It actually addresses something even more serious, because a misunderstanding can be cleared up. You can make your apologies and you can finally get to understand each other. Assuming that a person has clearly encoded, transmitted, received, and decoded the message itself can be a huge problem. And it runs the extremes, as James says, from blessings to curses. Now, James has already described the power of the tongue. He compares it again to a bit in a horse's mouth, the rudder on a ship, or a match that starts a forest fire. He says it's untamable. He says it's inconsistent because it blesses and curses. And there are a lot of proverbs that express as well the power of the tongue. The tongue can build up or it can destroy. Proverbs 11:9 says, "With his mouth the godless man destroys his neighbor, but through knowledge the righteous will be delivered." And what is true for an individual is also true for communities. Proverbs 11:11 says, "By the blessing of the upright a city is exalted, but by the mouth of the wicked it is torn down." That's powerful. Proverbs 10:14 adds, "Wise men store up knowledge, but the mouth of the foolish, ruin is at hand." Now, the ruin caused by a foolish mouth, it could be ruining others, or you could be ruining yourself. Proverbs 18:7 warns about this destructive force, saying, "A fool's mouth is his ruin, and his lips are a snare to his soul." That's pretty serious. Now, how does a fool's speech cause such harm? Well, Proverbs 12:16 explains that a characteristic of fools, is at least one of them, is anger. And their anger is known instantly. They don't have the self-control to conceal it. And being easily provoked, fools lash out and they provoke others. And with that, Proverbs 25:23 comes into play. "The north wind brings forth rain, and a backbiting tongue, an angry countenance." It's the words that generate that. "And when two fools meet," oh, it gets a lot worse. Proverbs 30, verse 33, "For the churning of milk produces butter, the pressing the nose brings forth blood, so the churning of anger produces strife." Get two hotheads together and it just gets pretty nasty. And that strife can lead to violence. Proverbs 18:6, "A fool's lips bring strife, and his mouth calls for blows." Now, speaking too much is also a source of ruin. Proverbs 13:3 says, "The one who guards his mouth preserves his life. The one who opens wide his lips comes to ruin." Proverbs 10:19 warns, "Where there are many words, transgression is unavoidable. He who restrains his lips is wise." And the wise man knows when to remain silent. Proverbs 17:27-28. "He who restrains his words has knowledge, and he who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding. Even a fool, when he keeps silent, is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he is considered prudent." Hence, we understand the proverbs that warn about speaking so much. The more we talk, generally the more trouble we're going to create for ourselves. The tongue has power to calm or to intensify. Proverbs 15:1, "A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger." Opposite results, same vehicle to get there, what you say. So a wise man is careful in what he says, a fool is not. Now most of us grew up with the adage, "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me." You heard that. Well, the reason for the adage is trying to get you to be careful to either ignore or walk away from those who speak as fools. But the adage is wrong. It's a lie. Proverbs 25:15 says, "By forbearance a ruler may be persuaded, and a soft tongue breaks bones." Words do hurt. And they can break bones through the consequences of what they cause. Proverbs 18:21 even says that death and life are in the power of the tongue. Well, how? Words stir people up. Words can stir people up to murder. In Acts 7, we find the Sanhedrin doing exactly that. They stir one another up and they murder Stephen. But they could also protect. Earlier in Acts 5, Gamaliel spoke and it calmed them down and they did not murder Peter and John. What is communicated in a court or to authorities will affect the judgments that are pronounced. That's why Proverbs 16:10 warns a divine decision in the lips of the kings. In the king, his mouth should not err in judgment. What he says is going to have a lot of consequences. Proverbs 14:25 says, "A truthful witness saves lives, but he who utters lies is treacherous." And that's why righteous lips are a delight to the king, and he who speaks right is loved. Proverbs 16:13. Now, what we say, what we communicate, is also powerful to bring healing. It can bring danger, but it can bring healing as well. Proverbs 12, verse 18, there is one who speaks rashly like the thrusts of a sword, there's the hurt, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. There's the medication. Proverbs 16:24 adds this, pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. The wise know how to encourage others, to restore hope in God even when there's great difficulties, when circumstances are hard. And most of us have experienced the physical effect that what someone else has said has had on us, to calm us, to encourage us, to soothe us, to heal us. But what is communicated can also deliver harm. Proverbs 12:6 points out, the words of the wicked lie in wait for blood, but the mouth of the upright will deliver them. A good example of this is in Acts 23. Paul's nephew overheard of a plot to kill Paul, to assassinate him. He came and told Paul, and then Paul directed him to tell the commander. The commander got Paul out of that dangerous situation, protected him. The wicked, though, were lying for blood. They conspired together. Proverbs 18:20 is an important one to me. I make my living by speaking. With the fruit of a man's mouth, his stomach will be satisfied. He'll be satisfied with the product of his lips. I like that one. Now, James 3 contrasts the tongue, again, being used both for blessing and for cursing men. Now, giving praise to God is a proper use of the tongue. There is proper speech we should be striving for. It really starts with praising God. A cursing arises from wickedness, according to Psalm 10. In Romans 14:11, Paul quotes Isaiah 45, that a day is coming when every knee shall bow and shall give praise to God. So eventually, it's going to come from everybody. Even those who despise God at present, they are going to give God praise. They will finally do right by what they say. Now, several proverbs contrast the proper use of the tongue in speaking wisdom with the folly of fools. Proverbs 10:31 says, the mouth of the righteous flow with wisdom, the perverted tongue will be cut out. So here again is this connection we've seen throughout our study of Proverbs of righteous character and wisdom, while there's a warning given to the wicked of the danger of being foolish. Proverbs 15:2 says, the tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable, but the mouth of fools spouts folly. So the wise not only speak with wisdom, they are able to express it in such a way that the knowledge is acceptable, it's received. The naive grow from it, while the one who lacks understanding, still being proud, declares things that are deficient, and they do so in disdain of the truth. Now, part of wisdom is speaking with appropriate timing and in circumstances. Proverbs 15:23, a man has joy in an apt answer, and how delightful is a timely word. Sometimes it's not just what is said, it's hearing it at the right point in time. You could speak too soon or you could speak too late. Proverbs 25:11 deals with the circumstances. Like apples of gold in settings of silver is a word spoken in right circumstances. So those are important aspects of proper use of your tongue. Another part of wisdom is answering only after hearing to gain the truth and then thoughtfully considering what should be said. Proverbs 15:28 says, the heart of the righteous ponders how to answer. So it's not a quick answer. The wise are going to think about it first. Problem with a lot of people is the mind is in gear and flowing, or the mouth is in gear and flowing before the mind has been engaged. And that's a problem. We want to think first. Proverbs 16:23, the heart of the wise instructs his mouth and adds persuasiveness to his lips. He's actually going to say something that's worthwhile and be able to persuade the person to his point of view if he's taken some time to think about it. Now that's contrasted with the foolish. The mouth of the wicked pour out evil things. They hear something and it's coming out. It's just flooding out. Proverbs 15:28. The consequence of that rash is described in Proverbs 18:13. He who gives an answer before he hears, it is folly and shame to him. And tragically, such folly is common even in Christian circles. All of us have experienced it. You're talking with someone, you want some advice, and you take a breath, and they're pouring out all sorts of advice that has really nothing to do with what you're talking about. And you're just kind of looking like, what? You've all talked to people that you can tell by looking at them. They are thinking about how they're going to answer and not bothering to listen to what you're saying to begin with. It's folly and shame. And all of us have also done it. Proper speech is, I'm going to be careful. I'm going to listen first. I will ponder what to say. I'm going to give some consideration to what actually was said so that that communication was good, and then I can give some wisdom. If not, I am in danger of just spouting off foolishness, which is a folly and a shame to me. It may not even be related to the actual subject or the problem. Now, the godly woman, Proverbs 31:26 tells us, opens her mouth in wisdom. The teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She actually is a fitting example of really the personification that we saw in wisdom when we studied that back in chapter 8. Wisdom speaks and says, listen, for I will speak noble things, and the opening of my lips will reveal right things, for my mouth will utter truth, and the wickedness is an abomination to my lips. All the utterance of my mouth are in righteousness. There's nothing crooked or perverted in them. That would be proper speech. That's what we should be striving for. That's speaking in wisdom. It's communicating with understanding. Now, it's also proper to speak the truth and to judge righteously. Proverbs 12:17 says, he who speaks the truth tells what is right. Ephesians 4:15 adds that the manner of our speaking the truth is to be in love. There are those who want to speak the truth, but they have no discretion, they have no timing, they are not correct in the circumstances, and they are harsh and hurtful with the truth. We speak it in love. It should be very obvious we actually care about the other person. That's why we're talking with them. Proverbs 31:9 says, open your mouth, judge righteously, and defend the rights of the afflicted and the needy. See, truth and justice are contrary to the natural bent of man. We will do whatever we can. That's our natural bent. We'll lie if necessary if it's going to give us some gain or protect us. But that's opposite of what God wants to do. God promises a blessing to the righteous, which is Proverbs 12:19 says, his truthful lips will be established forever. We're better off doing it God's way. Proper speech is wholesome. It seeks to build others up. Proverbs 10:31-32 says, the mouth of the righteous flows with wisdom. Again, there's that tie of righteousness and wisdom. The lips of the righteous bring forth what is acceptable. Ephesians 4:29 actually gives a good summary of how we should speak. Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth. That's not fitting for us as Christians. Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification. Edification is to build the other person up. According to the need of the moment, there is a timing issue in the circumstances for the purpose, so it will give grace to those who hear. That's what should be coming out of our mouths. Refrain from what is natural and go for a godly expression of wisdom. Proper communication also brings blessings, so and therefore it's very valuable. Proverbs 14:3, in the mouth of the foolish is a rod for his back, but the lips of the wise protect them. There's a blessing, protection. Proverbs 13:2, from the fruit of a man's mouth he enjoys good. That's a blessing. Proverbs 15:4, a soothing tongue is a tree of life. That's a blessing. And therefore it's expressed as very valuable in Proverbs 10:20, the tongue of the righteous is as choice silver. Now, communication that reflects righteousness can bring great blessings, but when what is communicated is sinful or it is done in a sinful manner, it brings great trouble. And again, we've all experienced that. Proverbs gives a lot of warnings about wrong use of the tongue and the resulting damage from it. And what every single type has in common is a bent toward sin, not doing it God's way, doing it your own way. When the heart is unrighteous, even the attempt to use what is good, a proverb, becomes either useless or even harmful. Consider these two proverbs, Proverbs 26:7-9. Like the legs which are useless to the lame, so is a proverb in the mouth of fools, has no idea how to use it. Or even worse, like a thorn which falls into the hand of a drunkard, so is a proverb in the mouth of the fool. It actually causes harm. Now, gossip is the first type of unrighteous speech I want to address. The English word gossip refers to spreading rumor about private matters behind somebody's back. And there are several aspects to gossip. There are several different words used in Proverbs to talk about it. Proverbs 18:8, 26:20 through 22 uses the word regan, which means whisperer, to refer to gossip, and it's referring to the secretive nature of gossip. I whisper it because I don't want them to hear it. Hence whisperer. It's behind their back. Proverbs 26:20 through 22 says, for lack of wood, the fire goes out. And where there is no whisperer, contention quiets down. Like charcoal to hot embers and wood to fire, so is a contentious man to kindle strife. The words of a whisperer are like dainty morsels, and they go down to the innermost parts of the body. The destruction caused by the whisperer is seen in Proverbs 16:28, where this same word is translated in the New American Standard as slanderer. A perverse man spreads strife, and a slanderer, a whisperer, separates intimate friends. That's a lot of damage. It's important to note here that it may not be the intention of the whisperer to cause such damage, and often it is not, but the danger of doing that damage is real nevertheless. Now, Proverbs 11:13 and 20:19 both use another word, rekel, to describe the spread of gossip. The root word means to go about, as in trading, merchandise. In this case, it's personal information that's being traded. It's translated as talebearer in quite a few English translations. Proverbs 11:13, he who goes about as a talebearer reveals secrets, but he who is trustworthy conceals a matter. They're spreading the rumor. A trustworthy man conceals it, not going to spread it. In Proverbs 20:19, it's translated as slanderer. He who goes about as a slanderer, and here is this talebearer, reveals secrets, therefore do not associate with a gossip. Now the word gossip in this verse is from a root word, peta, which means to entice or to deceive. The nature of gossip changes rapidly from maybe just an indiscretion, saying more than you should, not being careful, into becoming malicious. And that escalates it into the next word, which is dibah, which is translated as slanderer more correctly. It's a defaming evil report. It's used in Proverbs 10:18 and describes such a person as a fool. Tragically, there's a lot of those kinds of fools around. They're happy to defame others if they think it will gain for themselves. They're not just gossips. They become malicious gossips, and then they purposely slander. Now, as a general rule, if you would not say something directly to the person, then you don't need to say it at all. That's a general rule. Now, understand that there are times you need to talk to someone else about somebody because you've got a problem and you're not sure how to work it out. That's legitimate. But if you're going to do that, the responsibility now falls on you to go work it out. If you do not, you have fallen into gossip and possibly slander. If you are the person who is giving the advice, someone has come to you, here's my problem, they tell you about somebody, and you do not hold them accountable to get the problem worked out, then you're actually part of the problem because you've received gossip. If you repeat that to someone else, you've also become a gossip. So you can see how it escalates. So how do you end gossip? Actually, it's fairly simple. Hold the person who comes to you and tells you something accountable to go get it worked out with whoever they have the problem with. I guarantee you, you do that and they're not coming back to you to tell you gossip. Because they don't want to be held accountable. Or if you want, say, whoa, wait a minute, then I guess we just need to pray for this person right now and do some serious prayer right there, and they're not coming back either. Gossips don't want that. They just want to spread the rumor, not actually deal with it. And that's how you differentiate the two. Seduction is another wrong use of the tongue. Proverbs gives many specific warnings about the smooth tongue of the adulteress, Proverbs 6:24. Proverbs 2:16, 7:5, and 7:21 all warn about her flattery, which she uses to entice her victims with her many persuasions. Proverbs 22:14 summarizes well, the mouth of an adulteress is a deep pit. He who is cursed of the Lord will fall into it. It is a curse. But the seductress is not the only one that uses her tongue to lead astray the naive into her trap. There are many other ways to communicate to deceive others. Flattery is sweet to hear, but it's an artificial sweetener. Some people consider flattery polite lying, but it's still lying, and lying is a sin. And when the motives of flattery are exposed, it is seen for the evil that it really is. The English word flatter means to praise excessively, especially from motives of self-interest. And that matches very well the Hebrew word used in Proverbs, which is halak, which originated as a reference to smoothing metal and then became used of anything smooth and deceptive. In fact, it's translated in Psalm 55:21 as smooth as butter, slick. Proverbs 29:5 exposes the motives. It warns, a man who flatters his neighbor is spreading a net for his steps. It's a trap. It's meant to entrap prey. And flattery is used because it works. And it works because people like to hear praise about themselves, whether it's true or not. Flattery feeds the ego. It builds up pride. It binds the hearer to the danger that's upon them. It's a destructive force, and that's expressed well in Proverbs 26:28. A lying tongue hates those it crushes, and a flattering mouth works ruin. The lying tongue, the flatterer have the same goal in mind. The latter is simply more pleasant to listen to in the process of being destroyed. Be wary of those with smooth speech that flatter. Benjamin Franklin wisely said, the same man cannot both be a friend and a flatterer. Your first defense against flattery is having enough humility and an honest evaluation yourself not to believe it. Treat it like chewing gum. Enjoy it briefly, but don't swallow it. Okay? The godly prefer and practice themselves, Proverbs 28:23. He who rebukes a man will afterward find more favor than he who flatters with the tongue. See, the righteous seek to be true friends, described in Proverbs 27:6. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. Now, deception comes in more ways than just flattery, though. Proverbs gives many additional warnings about deception of all types. Proverbs 26:24-25 warns, he who hates disguises it with his lips. He lays up deceit in his heart. When he speaks graciously, do not believe him, for there are seven abominations in his heart. The deceiver conceals his real heart, his real motives. They can be pleasant. Their communication uses courtesy and kindness. But it's all for show. That's not what's real. He conceals what's really there. Proverbs 12:20, deceit is in the heart of those who devise evil. Now, that doesn't have to spill into flattery to be effective. All it has to do is hide the truth. That's all it has to do. So be very careful about the character of those who will give you counsel. Proverbs 12:5 warns, the thoughts of the righteous are just. The counsel of the wicked are deceitful. They will lead you astray. They will find an advantage. You are the victim. Now, there are many forms of deception. Most of us are very familiar with marketing deception. We think we're getting one thing, and we're actually getting something else. Is it really new and improved? Is it bigger, stronger, more effective? Is it really better for you? First question I have when those things come up is, compared to what? And then, why do I have to act immediately as if this item will never be on sale again? There was a furniture store down here on 9. I've been here 21 years. I think 19 of those years it was going out of business. They were finally successful. They went out of business. Proverbs 14:8 is pretty sobering. The wisdom of the sensible is to understand his way, but the foolishness of fools is deceit. Yet all of us have played the fool. We've all been deceived. And I understand the need for marketing, but God does not look on deception with favor. Proverbs 3:32 says, "For the devious are an abomination to the Lord, but he's intimate with the upright." It's an abomination. Proverbs 14:2 indicates the feeling actually is mutual, though. He who walks in his uprightness fears the Lord, but he who is devious in his ways despises him. They despise God. Another deception is offering some pleasure, a gift, or some advantage. Now, most of those things are some means to exploit you for financial gain. How many times does a marketer give you, say, come and listen to my presentation, you get this free gift? Yeah, right. It's simply to get you in there. Their goal is to sell you something. But these next two proverbs show a whole other side of this that's very dangerous. Proverbs 16:29, a man of violence entices his neighbor and leads him in a way that is not good. Enticement. Something to draw you in. Proverbs 1:10-24 and 2:12-15 both warn in detail about that particular danger. Do not go with them, the father tells his son, when they entice you to join them because, hey, they're going to rob someone, you get the proceeds. You're going to gain a lot of fun in doing this evil stuff with us. Both of those end, says the end of it, is death. The Proverbs also fits those that use enticements to set their victims up to be exploited. Proverbs 10:16 addresses this saying, blessings are on the head of the righteous, but the mouth of the wicked conceals violence. You get brought in to one thing and then actually you get physically harmed as well. He who speaks truth tells what is right, but a false witness deceit. Proverbs 12:17. So we need to be careful that we put away from ourselves deceitful mouths and devious speech from us. Proverbs 4:24. Proverbs 24:28. Do not be a witness against your neighbor without cause, and do not deceive with your lips. Do you realize you need to be careful about your humor? Proverbs 26:19 talks about someone who deceived his neighbor as a joke, and likened that person to someone who is a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death. Sometimes those practical jokes aren't so funny. Lying is at the root of gossip, seduction, flattery, and deception. And Proverbs is also very clear that lying is evil. Proverbs 6:17-19 lists a lying tongue and a false witness as among the seven things that God hates and considers an abomination. Proverbs 12:24 reinforces this, saying, lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who deal faithfully are his delight. Now, many people think they will gain for themselves by lying. And the truth is you often can gain in the short term by lying. We've all seen it. We've all been victims of it. You can gain in the short term by lying. The last round of elections simply just demonstrates that point one more time. A lot of lying going on. But ultimately, that's deception, because it's not going to help. Proverbs 21:6 says, the acquisition of treasures by a lying tongue is a fleeting vapor. It is the pursuit of death. You might gain short term, but not long term. Proverbs 19:9, a false witness will not go unpunished, and he who tells lies will perish. Now that's contrast in 12:19 with honesty. Truthful lips will be established forever, but a lying tongue is only for a moment. There's a short-term gain, but it's only short-term. And I hope you're living for the long-term, not the short. Lying is actually a revelation of a person's character. Proverbs 14:5 says, a trustworthy witness will not lie, but a false witness will lie. Why does he lie? Because it's his character. Sadly, our nation is becoming increasingly characterized by this kind of unrighteousness. And so they actually set themselves up to be deceived by liars. Proverbs 17:4 explains, an evildoer listens to wicked lips. A liar pays attention to a destructive tongue. Their very character sets them up to be deceived by other liars. How bad is it? Well, again, the last election is strong evidence. People desire to be deceived. Tell me what I want to hear. I don't want to take the time to ferret out what the truth is. Tell me what pleases me. But it's even worse than that. This quote was overheard this week in the halls of a major international business as a complaint about a coworker. Quote, he should be professional enough to know when he should tell the truth. Think about that. He should be professional enough to know when he should tell the truth. Since when did truth become optional, whether the person is professional or not? That's the business climate? How can a business, any kind of trade flourish in that kind of environment? Why does it cost so much to do certain things? Why do you have to have lawyers for all sorts of things that should be a handshake? Your word, given by your own lips, I will do this. But you have teams of lawyers to try to force the issue to do what you said you're going to promise to do. It's because of this. You can't trust them. And they set themselves up to be easily deceived. When lying becomes part of the legal system, then justice is perverted. Proverbs 19:28 states, a rascally witness makes a mockery of justice, and the mouth of the wicked spreads iniquity. Again, the liar can get away with the short term, but God's justice eventually catches up. If not in this life, surely when they stand before him and he judges them for every deed they've done. Proverbs 19:5 says, a false witness will not go unpunished. He who tells lies will not escape. Proverbs 29:26 says, many seek the ruler's favor, but justice for man comes from the Lord. How serious is lying? Have you read to the end of the book? Have you read Revelation? Revelation 21, verse 8, he's describing those who are in heaven, what heaven's like. Then he says this, but the cowardly and unbelieving and abominable and murderers and immoral persons and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars, their part will be in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. God is so serious about lying, he excludes all liars from heaven, and he instead condemns them through their just penalty. That's serious, isn't it? There's no such thing as a polite lie, a white lie, an inconsequential lie. He says all liars. And how many lies do you have to tell before you're a liar? How many people do you have to murder before you are a murderer? You see, perversion of the truth underlies all sin. And lying is perversion of the truth. Eve was deceived in the Garden of Eden and ate the forbidden fruit. Adam rejected the truth he had been given by God and joined Eve in her sin. Men pursue wickedness of their own selfish desires because they reject God's revelation of truth, including his law, which he has written on their conscience, according to Romans 2. So yes, even those who've never heard what the scriptures say, God has written it on their hearts, he's written on their conscience, and they reject it. The perversion that is in the heart will then flow out in what is communicated. Jesus said in Matthew 15:18-19, that what proceeds out of the mouth arises from within the heart. That includes thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, and slanders. Remember, false witness is a liar. Slandering is lying. People have problems with their mouths because they have problems with their heart. All men start there. That's the state we were born in. You don't have to remain there, though. That's our hope. That's where we were. That's where all men were. But they don't have to stay there. Proverbs 11:20 states, "The perverse in heart are an abomination to the Lord, but the blameless in their walk are his delight." That may have been where you were at. You don't have to remain there. Now, how does a person with a perverted heart and a mouth that gossips, deceives, and lies become blameless? Well, that's what the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ is all about, isn't it? Jesus, the second person, the eternal God, Godhead, became a physical human. He became a man, became flesh. He dwelt among us. He lived a sinless life. He then died on the cross willingly, of his own volition, as a substitute payment for our sin. He paid the price that we don't have to. He breaks the bondage of sin with that, according to Romans 6. His resurrection from the dead proves the sacrifice was accepted, all of his promises are true, and he can empower you to live differently. You can't earn it. All our righteous deeds are as filthy rags before God, Isaiah 64:6 tells us. But with that, with faith in Christ, eternal life is granted. And it's solely, on the basis of believing who Jesus is and what his promises are. Holding fast, trusting those things. That his work of redemption is sufficient for you. There's no condemnation of those who are in Christ Jesus, Romans 8:1 tells us. And because the Lord cleanses the heart from its perversity, well, then you can properly communicate what is right and then cease to say what is sinful. Proverbs 12:23 says, "He who guards his mouth and his tongue guards his soul from troubles." The Lord also calls you to walk in wisdom and grants that wisdom in order to, as Proverbs 22:12 says, to deliver you from the way of evil, from the man who speaks perverse things. It changes you so you don't do it yourself. It protects you from those